If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, and ahead of the series returning next week, welcome to this bonus New Year edition of the Media Podcast, in which we invite our esteemed pundits to predict media trends for 2021, and then, entirely unfairly, hold them to account for their predictions for the year just gone. I'm Ollie Mann, and this is the 5th annual Media Podcast Prediction Special. And joining me to kick off the show, Deadline's international editor Jake Cantor is here, and the MD of production company Gold Wallet, Faraz Osman. Happy New Year, chaps.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Hello, hello.
Jake, let's start with you. I'm going to humiliate you, or possibly applaud you first, by recapping what you said last year. You predicted that 2020 would be the consolidation of streaming services, a sort of Apple buying Netflix situation, you said, because there is simply too much on-demand content to watch. You said more big British talent will be snapped up by the streaming services, and you speculated that Channel 4's Ian Katz could be out of a job. Why don't you rate yourself? Give us your own scorecard there, Jake.
I'd say maybe 1.5, 2 at a push. 1.5, 2. Let's go 1.5.
Let's go through them step by step.
Yeah, obviously Apple didn't buy Netflix, but I think I caveated that quite heavily when I mentioned that last time I was on the podcast. But I mean, we are starting to see some consolidation, I would say. You've only got to look at Disney, which has unveiled plans to make its Star streamer available internationally via Disney Plus, and that's a sort of more adult service to go alongside some of the safe children's content on Disney Plus. And yeah, you'll see series like Lost and 24 here in the UK, and it will be a destination where, you know, grown-ups can go and do some TV watching away from, you know, the Pixar films.
Okay, so you might call that consolidation, but you could say, actually, rather than what you said, which is that there's simply too much on-demand content to watch. I mean, you couldn't have predicted this, obviously, because you didn't know the coronavirus was coming, but there's no end to appetite for streaming content. The very fact you're mentioning Disney Plus at all, which is a huge success story, shows people are happy to keep subscribing to these things.
That is true. That is entirely true. But sooner or later, I steadfastly believe there will have to be some consolidation. There is not enough room in people's pockets, in their wallets, to be paying for all of these services well into the future. I think in a short term, when people are not going to the cinema and they're not going to eat out dinner and they're staying very much within their four walls, people are very willing to spend a bit of extra money on the things that they're watching on their television. And that's probably why you're seeing such a boom in streaming at the moment. I don't think that there'll be a cliff edge to that, but I do think it will taper off from the levels that we're seeing, particularly last year.
You were right, though, to say that more big British talent will be snapped up by the streaming services, weren't you?
I was plumb on the money on. I think the biggest deal was one that I actually reported on, I revealed, which is that Charlie Brooker, his production company called Broken Bones, was bought by Netflix in a first-of-its-kind deal for Netflix here in the UK. You know, big chunk of change swapped hands. I'm told about $100 million it could total out at. We saw the fruits of that relationship come to bear at the end of the year when Charlie did Death to 2020.
And Ian Katz is still in his job at Channel 4. But do you think it's been a precarious year for him?
I think actually coronavirus has been helpful for Ian Katz because it has allowed him to change the narrative about what he's doing at Channel 4. I think going into last year, there were a lot of concerns about the fact that Channel 4 was over-reliant on a lot of old brands and wasn't innovating in the way that it should have done. But coronavirus has completely disrupted all of that. It went through a very, Channel 4 went through a very, very sticky patch. There was an existential wobble around April time when the TV ad market just completely collapsed, but it actually recovered really well. And the audience share on its main channel rose 3% last year, which is really impressive. I think there are still questions around innovation, it's one of the most undervalued skills in television, keeping old shows successful. And if you look at the health of Gogglebox and the extraordinary year that Bake Off had, I mean, just a brilliant series through and through, you have to applaud those things.
Okay, well, you're talking to the expert here in keeping old brands alive. Blimey, how long have you been doing this? Faraz, on to you. Your predictions from last year were, quite astonishingly, that cinema is going to have a rough time thanks to the launch of Disney Plus, that video games will dominate advertising and entertainment, that the ownership of social media platforms such as TikTok will change hands, and that someone will make a play for Twitter. That was a pretty good sweep of predictions, I must say. What did you know?
I'm not saying I've been looking forward to this podcast, but I'm pretty flipping smug right now. And to add to that as well, I also said in 2019 that Tony Hall was going to step down, and he stepped down in January, so I was only a couple of months off from that. And Apple would launch a media bundle, and they have done that, and they've kind of done something bigger than that with Apple Fitness and Apple News and Apple Arcade. So whether or not that bundle is going to sell, I think that Jake is smart in what he's saying about the limits that people have with the amount of money they've got in their pocket. I would argue that that's the reason why Quibi failed and why other streaming broadcasters that are launching now are struggling. But I think that it was as smug as I am, the truth is that anybody that made predictions last year were completely moot because of what's happened. And, the whole world has turned upside down. The thing that has happened is that everything has accelerated.
Yeah, I mean, the cinemas are literally closed. I mean, you couldn't have predicted that.
Maybe, but actually, I think that the question about how cinemas will continue to operate when Netflix are making so much investment into big budget films like Roma, that was coming up the horizon. And it could be argued that it just has happened sooner sooner than people thought.
But actually, the other thing that might have accelerated, as well as, cinemas having a hard time, what might have accelerated is the kind of Gatsbyization of the cinema experience once it's back on, right? So you might go less, but when you go, you might be spending more money, having a more luxury experience, really enjoying other people being in the room, choosing your film carefully. It's not dead.
Yeah, well, I think that the end of this year is going to be really fascinating. I think that, like, we will still be having a bit of apprehension into going lots into places with lots of people that we don't know, coughing and spluttering all over the place until we do get towards the end of the year. And I do think cinema will require some smart business models to reemerge from this. I think we'll see less of them. I don't think all of them are going to reopen. And the ones that do reopen will have to be a little bit more innovative in what they're offering. And also we've got things like MGM going up for sale, which, they look after the Bond franchise and as well as loads of classics. And I think that a streamer will pick that up and will continue to kind of plant the flag in the sand about where you watch movies and the fact that you do it on a streaming platform and not in a cinema. But like either way, I think that lots of studios, lots of film studios have been sitting on some pretty hot scripts waiting for the ability to film them. And that's going to happen this year. So I do think we're going to get some pretty awesome storytelling towards the tail end of this year. Where we'll watch it, I think, is still open for debate.
And gaming, video games will dominate advertising and entertainment, you said. Talk us through how that went, because quite a lot of people who listen to this show are aware that they should know more about gaming, but frankly don't.
I think that you have to get on the train now. The gaming industry is so massive. It's bigger than sport, and some people are saying it's bigger than music now. It's the revenue this year from gaming outstripped the revenue from sport and movies combined. Sonic the Hedgehog was one of the biggest films of the year. You had everyone playing Among Us, including Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez fundraising on it with Ilhan Omar during the during the election this year, Biden Harris launched a thing in Animal Crossing where you could go and visit their campaign HQ in a Nintendo game. BBC Sport are doing Rocket League. Netflix are doing video, you know, are using video games IP to build up their library. So we'll see a Resident Evil series. We saw The Witcher do massive numbers. Final Fantasy, Cyberpunk, Cuphead, all of those things are coming to Netflix as narrative series. So it is absolutely huge, and I think it's only going to get bigger, and I think it is going to be a generational split of people who are, I'm going to say our age and below. I'm going to still put us in the right age bracket, but our age and below are really going to continue to see how video games are just such an integral part of popular culture, and it's going to be a case of those who are on board and those who aren't.
And just briefly on this, before we move on to your predictions for the year ahead, on gaming, that thing about revenue, because people often say that, do you realise it's bigger than Hollywood or whatever? Is that just because the games cost 50 quid, though? That's what I've never been able to get my head
around. Why don't you wait till my predictions and then we can kind of talk about that.
Oh, a tease. A hook and tease. Didn't know you had radio skills as well, Faraz. All right, let's go to Jake. What are your predictions for 2021, Mr. Cantor?
Oh, my word. I mean, my predictions sound so policy wonky after this conversation.
That's why you're here,
Faraz,
Jake.
Is just... rattled
the
off
box for us.
It's just rattled off, you know, Gen Z and millennial heaven, right?
Yeah.
there
I love wonking over policy.
Your prediction is we're gonna see Oliver Dowden in Animal Crossing. No.
No, but I do think we'll see Oliver Dowden do something fairly significant this year, which is fire a starting gun on probably the biggest update in broadcasting legislation in 18 years. You know, broadcasting laws are stuck in 2003 when Netflix was still a DVD company. Mm. And Amazon had just posted its first profit. Quite a bit has changed since then. So, and much of it for the better. You know, viewers have more choice and TV is booming. But amid all of that, it's important that we sort of preserve our quaint little broadcasting ecology. I say quaint, it's not quaint at all. It's a multi-billion pound industry. I think first and foremost, central to all of that is... protecting public service broadcasting on all platforms. Ofcom is due to publish its final recommendations from its public service broadcasting review this summer, and it will say that the likes of the BBC and ITV should have greater prominence on TV menus so that valuable content such as news doesn't get lost in the mix, the noise of content that we're all faced with these days.
Yeah, I must say I was surprised the other day trying to find BBC One HD on my Sky Plus platform is harder than it should be. I mean, it is still the most popular channel in the country. You just can't find it.
That's a hangover from carriage wars between the BBC and Sky. And it's a very odd thing that BBC HD is buried.
All right, but give me some really clear prediction here, because it's all very well to say he's going to fire the starting gun. We know that. Give me some words that are going to be in his report.
Exactly what I've just said. I think there will be protections.
It's like Priti Patel. What did you just say? Key words.
There will be protections brought in to make sure that the likes of BBC One HD remain high in TV guides, that when you go onto your Skybox, that the iPlayer app is very, very clearly signposted next to the Netflix app.
Okay. Let's alternate you. Why not? You've got a couple of predictions each, right? So, Faraz, what else have you got for us for 2021?
Well, I think that I can build on what Jake said. 2020 obviously was an anomaly. And Jake mentioned this earlier about how the advertising revenue bounced back up again and the audience share of Channel 4 bounced back up again. I don't know if that's sustainable. I think that a lot of that is being because we've been stuck indoors and TV has been our best friend for this pandemic. I think that this is going to be the year of the IP. And we're going to see the ad-based broadcasting model at its deathbed. So what it's going to do is we're going to accelerate this idea of So we're going to really see an issue around the ad-based broadcasting model, particularly because I think sport is going to struggle. I think there's question marks still over the Olympics and the football for this year, and that's really going to hit Channel 4 and ITV quite hard.
Can you give us a stat? Can you give us a prediction of what that might do to their bottom line or what the decline in ratings might be? I want something I can hold you to.
Well, I think that when you compare it to the Olympics of previous years, I think viewing of the Olympics, if it even happens, I would argue that viewing of the Olympics will probably be down by about 10%.
Okay, I like that. I mean, I don't like that, but I like the stat, yeah.
But if they try to do it this year, and the reason for that is that I just cannot see as many countries competing, and it will feel like it's not as big as Olympic and sporting events have been previously, which I think is true of the football as well. The Premier League, when you watch the Premier League without a crowd, in the way that they're playing it, it's still the Premier League, but it doesn't feel like it's as big as it used to be. And that will, I'll cycle back to that, because I think that that's going to have an impact on sports rights for this round as well. But when it comes to kind of broadcasters, Channel 4 and ITV in particular, I think we're going to start seeing those models, particularly Channel 4, pivot into building IP and not being a broadcasting company. And I think this goes mm-hmm. back to what Jake was saying about Ian's role. I think Ian Katz, the previous generation of Channel 4 with Jay Hunt leading it, Jay was the queen of that channel, and what she said is what the channel was. I think what we're going to see with Alex Mahon firing the starting gun on the Future 4 proposal is that Channel 4 will be seen as a place where you build new ideas, a little bit like they did with The Circle. So you build and launch an idea on Channel 4, and then the idea is that you would get that seen by the streamers, who are these big, massive gorillas in the room, and hope to sell the international rights to those streamers.
So then does it become a co-production effectively in the UK?
Effectively, yeah. So I think we'll see more and more broadcasters, particularly ITV and Channel 4, taking more rights from independent production companies. They will be both the thing that helps develop that show, that shouts about it because it'll be broadcast, and then they will then help sell that and be the broker to sell that to the big streaming platforms with international versions, different language versions, but the format and the IP will kind of remain with the production company, shared with the broadcaster. And I think as we go forward, that's going to be the role of Channel 4 in kind of continuing to push the spirit of what independent production looks like in the UK.
All right, Jake, give us another wonky politics prediction.
Well, I'm going to revisit an old prediction which I previously got wrong, but I'm convinced this year we'll be right. And that is that the BBC will close a TV channel this year.
Wow.
I mean, the most likely candidate is obviously BBC Four, which has already been hollowed out. Some of its original shows are moving to BBC Two. And last year, its controller, Cassin Harrison, was done out of a job, basically shifted quietly over to BBC Studios, which is the BBC's commercial arm. And furthermore, it sort of plays into a bigger narrative that's going on at the BBC at the moment, which is they have taken the fairly seismic decision to scrap channel controller roles and place a much bigger emphasis on iPlayer first commissioning. And that's a sort of huge power shift from traditional broadcasting to streaming. And I think within that narrative, I don't think you can justify having three channels on television anymore. Obviously, the BBC has other channels, children's channels, which serve very specific purposes. And Faraz, with his new CBeebies commission, will tell you how important those children's channels are. But I think in terms of those traditional three, BBC One, BBC Two, BBC Four, those three channels, I don't think you can sustain them in the future.
Interesting. And actually, in previous years, when you did predict that that was going to happen, it seemed probably more outrageous that that might happen. Whereas now, it does sort of feel more inevitable, partly because BBC Three's gone in a linear form, and partly, I guess, you know, the comparison with CBeebies is an interesting one, isn't it? I use CBeebies as a dad to tell my child in the linear broadcast when is the time to get your clothes on and go to school, because it happens at the same time every day, and that's important. It's a babysitting service. Whereas actually BBC Four, I mean, you can find Mark Kermode and Neil Brand and whatever you want to watch on iPlayer. It doesn't matter what time they're on the linear. I mean, no one cares anymore, do they? Literally no one who watches that channel is sitting there going, right, 9 p.m, what's on?
Well, I think one of the main reasons it probably hasn't gone already is that it is a channel that is well-liked by the chattering classes and therefore known to politicians. I think it will be unpopular if they axe BBC Four. I've no doubt it will be unpopular. Always is unpopular when the BBC threatens services. I think the most counterintuitive thing that the BBC is talking about is moving BBC Three back to television, which would be very, very odd given the narrative around the shift to digital. And from what I can tell from sources I speak to at the BBC, the briefing that went on around moving BBC Three back to TV has calmed down somewhat and is not quite as spicy as it once was.
Okay, Faraz, give us your big finish. And I should say, if you're listening to this thinking I don't care about gaming, that's fine. We've got many more guests to come on the show. Stay with us. But Faraz, What is your gaming prediction?
Well, I think that based on exactly as you said earlier, I think that we're going to really see this year being the year of game streaming. Xbox Games Pass has been a thing that's been kicking around for a while, which is their equivalent of Netflix for games. You know, you pay a subscription service and you have access to hundreds of games. Google launched their version with Stadia. Amazon are going to be launching their version. Apple have launched the Apple Arcade Plus. But I think that with the launch of 5G and that getting to being at critical mass this year, I think having a game streaming subscription is just going to start becoming the norm. And I think that we're going to see quite a large adoption of game streaming platforms where you have a £6 to £12 subscription to access lots and lots of games. And we're going to stop seeing...
So to my point then about the cost of games, like I said, 50 quid, you know, for a cartridge in the old days or for a digital subscription now, that's gone, has it? But the revenue still stay?
I think it's gone for everybody apart from Nintendo. I think Nintendo continue to be an anomaly in the video game space. But I think for... companies like Microsoft and Sony, eventually, we will see subscription-based video game services moving forward. More free-to-play games where you know it's free at point of entry and then you pay lots of microtransactions to enjoy the additional content like you see in Fortnite and Apex Legends and Among Us. But the kind of premium games are going to start coming under bigger banners. And I think that when you look at how difficult it's been to get hold of one of this next generation of consoles, but they've still completely dominated the narrative and the mindshare of the entertainment world, it really demonstrates that actually game streaming makes complete sense because you can play anywhere on your phone, on your computer, on your TV, and that's exactly what the success of Netflix was, and we'll start seeing it with video games as well.
Okay, my thanks to our very own Apex Legends, Faraz Osman and Jake Cantor. We will be holding you to account next year. Now, let's see who's left a message on the Media Podcast Hotline.
Hello, my name's Anne Charles from Anne Charles Media and Radio TechCon. My prediction is that voice-based social media apps will be big this year. Clubhouse already has a major buzz around it. Stereo is spending loads of money on social media advertising, and Twitter is developing a Clubhouse rival called Spaces. So this is a real opportunity for people who love audio to showcase their skills. I also think commercial radio is likely to steal another couple of former BBC talent to their ranks, so have a look at the lineup for LBC, Times Radio, and maybe even Scala to see if you can spot some new names.
Next new message.
Hello, it's Ian Dale from LBC. I've got two predictions for 2021. One is that the Daily Telegraph will go tabloid in format by the end of the year, or at least announce its intention to. I think it's the best way it can compete with the Times. And secondly, that Kay Burley will not return after 6 months to present Sky News Breakfast. She'll be given an all-encompassing roving role where she'll make special programmes. So you can guarantee that neither of those two will come true.
Maggie Brown with her predictions for 2021. I'm an optimist for 2021. I think we can see that never has there been such a greater need for public service, media and broadcasting, especially after the horrors of 2020 and the American election. In my opinion, the BBC is in a stronger position than we might have thought it would have been now, partly because of its sterling service with operations like Bite Size, catering for the nation's children, and also, I think, trying very hard to reform itself in terms of the way, for example, it covers news and current affairs and other topics from the nations and the regions. It's got a new chair, it's got a new regime, and I hope that it goes from strength to strength. It will be celebrating its centenary in 2022, so I think that it's got plenty going for it, and I even think it's managing to navigate the over 75s licence issue. This has been a very harsh period for people who are depending on advertising or freelancers working in the creative sector. And I don't know how, obviously, the economy is going to work out. But one thing you can see, if you look at the UK as a whole, there is a big growth in studios. The streamers in particular, American operators, are building facilities, large production units in the UK. Mainly it's true around London and the South East, but there is going to be a global hub, I think, for production, certainly in England, and there will be a lot of work coming through, both films and television series, and indeed documentaries, as we can see. I also think that there's, in a way, a new accommodation taking place for some newspapers. It's been, of course, terribly hard, but you can see the growth in subscriptions for national newspapers, and you can also hear throughout the political debate a need for better regional and local newspapers or news operations that can be trusted. All in all, then, I don't say that this is going to be an easy year, but I do actually think that the British, certainly broadcasting sector, will bounce back. And of course, I include in that Channel 4, because my Channel 4 history from 2007 to the current day will be coming out this spring. And it clearly has got a threat of privatisation over it. But I also think that it has plenty of scope to prove that it's a useful and a creative force for innovation across the UK. It has taken itself out of London. It's perfectly capable of striking deals which can reinforce it without, I think, going down the route of needing private capital. So that's my prediction.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Right, welcome back for the second half of the show. I am joined by Folder Media's Matt Deegan. Happy New Year, Matt.
Happy New Year, Ollie.
Let's see how you fared on your predictions for the past 12 months. You said 2020 will be the rise of the podcast exclusive from BBC Sounds, Spotify and Apple Podcasts. You said commercial radio consolidation will happen. We'll see the end of very local independent commercial radio. The examples were KM, FM, Q Radio. And you said that we will see attacks on the BBC by government are going to increase. Not a bad scorecard. Let's go through them all in turn.
I think that's pretty good.
Podcast exclusives last year. Yes, I mean, lots of that going on, wasn't there?
Yes, particularly from Spotify. Though on BBC Sounds, quite a few things went on there first before later kind of going on to Apple Podcasts and other places. We haven't really seen podcast exclusives from Apple. There's still lots of talk that they're going to get into the content space. They've said that they're going to create podcasts for some of their Apple TV shows. They haven't kind of hired any big names or anything. Though they've made some kind of interesting behind the scenes hires over the past few months. So I still think there is something coming from them that's a little more interesting.
What would the financial model be? Because, I mean, with Apple TV Plus, you sort of kind of get what the financial model is. I mean, it's a subscription video service at the end of the day, once they actually start charging people for it. But with podcasts, partly through their own doing, there exists an ecosystem where people are not prepared to pay for it. So what would it would just be getting people to their podcast app. That would be the only advantage.
Well, I think they're facing, for the first time, proper competition from Spotify for people using their software to listen to podcasts. And having had the market for so long, there is a danger for them in that they will squander an excellent lead that they have. And a good way to do that is to create your own content. We saw the other week that Wondery is about to be bought by Amazon. Amazon launched Amazon Music podcasts at the end of last year. Having a stake in the content game gives you some pull when either you're trying to launch an app or you're trying to create an ad network around your premium content. I mean, that's the other thing that Spotify are doing with all these signups. They're creating a premium network for advertising for podcasting.
Okay, now commercial radio consolidation, difficult to argue against that. I mean, it's hard to think of many commercial radio stations that aren't now part of the three big groups. But KMFM and Q Radio, the examples you gave, I think both of those do still exist, don't they?
Yes, so they are still independent. So it's a... on that one.
But the spirit of the law, to borrow a trendy phrase, was correct, wasn't it?
The broad thing what I was saying is there are very few stations left that aren't part of networks. And even your KMFMs and your Qs are sort of now part of Bauer because Bauer now sell their national advertising. So you've kind of... there are very few small stations left. And I think the knock-on of that we're going to probably see this year as well.
Yeah, well, our friends over on the Radio Today programme podcast would say that this could create a boon for ultra-local radio stations. But do you agree? Because, I mean, that's sort of given as a sort of relatively unchallenged assertion when radio geeks talk to each other, but do the public really want a hyper-local station?
It's interesting. So one of our businesses, we run multiplexes around the country that sell space to people who want to come on and broadcast radio stations. We have the BBC and big commercial groups on there, but we have small groups too, small stations. And it's that thing, of, you know, there is definitely a market for a local service. There's definitely a gap in the market for that. The question is always, is there a market in the gap? Can they build businesses around that? And what we've seen in North Yorkshire, where Bauer... replaced Minster FM, Stray FM and Yorkshire Coast Radio with Greatest Hits. People from all three of those stations have launched basically the old station back again as a local service on our digital radio multiplex and on internet and mobile and those sorts of things. But the most interesting thing about them is they've kept a lot of the salespeople from the old days. So if there's someone that's going to make a good go at it, you'd assume it was them. And those stations had done quite well as independent stations. So that'll be one of the tests, I think. Can some of those hyper-local newbies make a business? And if they can, then I think we'll see probably an explosion in people having a go. But it's tough.
And then attacks on the BBC by government are only going to increase, you predicted, ahead of 2020. I'm going to posit that that got slightly interrupted by coronavirus.
Yeah, so I think first 3 months of the year, absolutely, it got tougher, particularly Dominic Cummings, when they were saying who the chair might be and all those sorts of things. Then the BBC pulled out a brilliant public service rabbit from the hat, obviously, for doing the...
New conspiracy. Was it all launched by the BBC?
Oh, they sent someone to China. It wasn't a bat after all.
Yeah, yeah.
The Tomorrow's World team went and did it. Yeah, so I think that did stop it growing. And I think they probably warded it off a little bit, but also the fact that some of the right-wing headbangers have been chucked out at number 10 as well. You know, the Tories generally not big fans of the BBC. That's not going to change. But the people who really wanted it probably aren't there anymore. Mm. And the government have bigger problems to deal with, Brexit, coronavirus.
And the public like the BBC at the moment, don't they, suddenly? They've been Marcus Rashfordized.
Yes.
all right, predictions for 2021 then, what can you give us?
So on radio, because it will have been probably 15 months since Erasure, I think we're going to see some surprises in the radar when it finally comes out. One of the things we normally have is it goes quarter by quarter, and so it's all very gentle. Mm. I think we'll see some big changes. I think Times Radio is going to do good, going to do well.
What does that mean? Can you give us a number? I wouldn't ask anyone else this, but you, of all people, radar watcher Matt Deegan, what would you say Times Radio should get?
So a success for them would, I think, be 500,000 listeners. Mm-hmm. I think they might go 700,000.
Wow, okay. Quite bold. Yeah, they would be happy with that, wouldn't they?
And I think Greatest Hits, which is the combination of these stations, I think they'll see a decent decline, a kind of maybe a 15% decline on what they used to be as independent stations. Mm-hmm. But I think generally there's going to be a lot more ups and downs because I think people's behaviours changed during lockdown. Yes. And that's changed how they consume radio, and it's going to be a stark view of that.
But what's down, actually? I mean, okay, you say the old stations that used to be Greatest Hits, but you can imagine that news radio would be up because of the desperate circumstances we've been in, say 5 Live, LBC, whatever, but also that actually people escaping the news circumstances, you know, I've been listening to a lot of Magic at the Musicals, will also be up. So, like, who's not doing well out of it?
Well, because it's going to be sort of 15, 16 months worth, I don't think it's going to be as easy as saying, hey, it's news up or music down or those things. I think it's more that people have had different times to listen to different things. And so their general, what their basic stations that they listen to at breakfast or throughout the day will shift. And I think that'll have an effect, quite a big effect on reach nows.
Steve Allen's spike might finally be flattened.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
What else?
I think we're going to see some big companies quietly stopping doing podcasts because they've realised that the economics don't add up.
I could have told them that.
I think that, yeah, some people who probably have 3, 4, 5 shows are just going to look at that and go, we can't really make that work economically.
So like who? Like a podcast network, or you mean like the radio networks?
I think like maybe like newspapers or magazines that do stuff, or people where it's not their core activity. I think it seemed fun and hot and sexy and the thing to get into, but they'll realise actually it's quite hard to do.
And I suppose the hard thing might be that they're not necessarily losing much money on them. They might be almost breaking even. It's just a calculation of effort versus reward, isn't it? You want the prestige, and I guess there's so much competition now.
Yes, and I think when you look at where your resources should be put into, you know, I think people put a decent amount of time in. I think there is a lot of ego podcasting in B2B publications, or even just from, you know, some media titles. People just want to be on, but actually the figures that they're getting don't really justify it.
Yeah. So if you have a B2B media podcast title that you're going to kill off, sponsor ours instead.
Absolutely. Go where the audience is.
And go on. You have one more prediction for us?
And I think Spotify is going to move to be the number one podcast app in the UK.
By what? How do you measure that? I mean, who measures that?
Podcast hosts normally can tell you how people are listening.
Yeah.
But I think sort of generally here in Britain, where Apple is still the lead, I think we'll see Spotify take over, just because exclusives, it being an app people are more used to using, and it being more cross-platform. So yeah, I think Spotify will go number one in podcasts.
I must say, here is a MediaPod exclusive for you, MediaPodders. I have switched my podcast listening allegiance to Spotify, not from Apple, actually. I used to listen to Pocket Casts because I wanted to download shows to my phone, and that was the main thing I was concerned about, getting on the London Underground or whatever. Being at home, having good quality broadband, Spotify's better at moving from my phone to the DAB streaming Bluetooth thing in the kitchen to my laptop upstairs. It knows where I'm up to. I'm just streaming everything. I don't download anything anymore.
Yeah, and I think that they'll keep improving the product. Interesting, today it was announced that Pocket Casts is up for sale.
Oh, right.
So Pocket Casts, really good third-party app, was bought by a consortium of public broadcasters last year.
Yeah.
Like NPR types. And I thought that was quite a good idea, them having a stake in that world. But I assume they've gone, this is hard. It is hard to make an impact in, and look at, you know, where these devices and services are. So they're kind of put up for sale. Also, Twitter bought Breaker, which was sort of an early breakout third-party app, and that's being shut down. Though I think it'll be sold off. But the team are moving to Twitter to head up a lot of their own audio plans.
Yeah, it's a safe prediction always, isn't it, that whatever is bought by Twitter will get shut down.
Yes.
I can't think of anything they've kept going. Thank you very much, Matt. Great predictions. We will hold you to account next year. Thank you very much for joining us, Matt Deegan, and all our foolhardy contributors for going on the record once again. Of course, the only way to guarantee they will be firmly held to account next year is to ensure the survival of this show. If you love what we do, please take a moment now to donate a few pounds. You can do that at themediapodcast.com/donate. And everything you contribute goes directly to making the next episode. That is themediapodcast.com/donate. We will be back with our first proper show of the year next Thursday. Subscribe to get that episode as soon as it drops. Just search for The Media Podcast on your podcasting app of choice. I've been Ollie Mann. The producer this week was Matt Hill. The Media Podcast is a PPM and Rethink Audio production. Bye-bye.
My other one, which kind of relates to what Jake is saying, and I'm wanting to kind of put money on this. I reckon BBC Parliament and BBC News are going to merge, and it's going to be BBC News slash Parliament that disappears, because I just don't think anybody will care about 24-hour news anymore. Trump's gone, Brexit's gone, news is going to be boring.
I disagree with that. I hard disagree with that.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.